the Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future deco, modern, retro, and other related events. Also the stories that celebrate New Zealand's history and its people, as well as book reviews and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era.
Deco Retro. Deco Retro.
Good afternoon, listeners. I'm Philippa, and welcome to the Deco Retro program. Before I begin today's program, I would like to express my appreciation and thanks to all those people who have graciously agreed to be interviewed over the 9 years that the Deco Retro program has been going to air. And most importantly, I would like to thank Nancy Smith, whose initiative and drive was instrumental in getting the Deco Retro program up and running. Many thanks also to the Auckland Art Deco Society that has steadfastly funded our program from the beginning when we first started in 2014. And here we are still going in February 2024. It would be very remiss of me if I didn't mention also the help and encouragement we received from the staff of Planet FM, especially from Paul and Joe, both of whom provided the technical support that made our program possible. Creating a monthly program and sourcing people of interest who might agree to be interviewed has at times been challenging, but also very rewarding for both Nancy and myself. Personally, I feel I have gained self-confidence and learned so much, not only from researching and creating some of the programs, but also from the many people who have been helpful and generous with their time when agreeing to be interviewed by us. However, for many of us, life has changed in so many ways since the time of COVID. So it seems that the time has now come for some of us to look to the future. This might possibly be my final program on Planet FM, and if so, who better for me to interview today than Kay Eadie, the author of Preludes and Feuds, The Lewis Eadie Story. Kay Eadie, nay voice, grew up in Auckland. She attended diocesan school for girls, leaving school at the end of the sixth form in 1958. While at school, Kay was passionate about ballet. She was offered a Royal Ballet School scholarship, but still in her early teens, it was decided she was too young to move to London on her own. After leaving business college, her first job was secretary to the first woman bursar at Auckland University, where she even helped to choose fabrics and colours for the university's new academic regalia. Kay typed a large part of C.K. Stead's PhD thesis and also typed ancient Greek on a special typewriter. She then decided to set off on her OE with some friends and on arrival in England landed a job at the Air Ministry. After travelling around Europe, she returned to Auckland where she met and married John Eadie. They had 5 children. When working at the University of Auckland in the 1980s, Kay embarked on a diploma in business studies extramurally through Massey University. Kay also decided to complete her Bachelor of Arts degree as an extramural student at Massey University. She studied history, English, and creative writing, and used the history of Lewis Eadie Limited, her late husband's family business, as the basis for some of her assignments. Both Massey University and the University of Auckland were of the view that the history of such an old established music business, now 143 years old, would be of significance to the history of Auckland, and they encouraged her to complete her BA and embark on the business history as a master's thesis. She completed her thesis at the end of 2012. But as it only covers the period from 1880 until 1957, more work needed to be done to complete the business history to the present day. Her thesis is held in the University of Auckland Library. Her book, Preludes and Feuds, The Lewis Eady Story, was first published in 2023. I would first like to read two passages from her book. First, this from the preface. I cannot realize yet that I am going 14,000 miles away from all I love so dearly. Shall we ever all meet again? Anguished sentiments such as these, expressed by Mary Louisa Eady, must have been typical of many people who left England in the 1800s to seek a new life in an unknown distant land. The recurring question that New Zealanders most often ask is what prompted their British ancestors to make such a long and perilous journey to an unknown country. Mary Louisa Eady and her husband William, together with their three young sons, set sail from Gravesend, England, on the 20th of May, 1865, aboard the American clipper ship, the Andrew Jackson, bound for New Zealand. The factors that persuaded this family to uproot themselves from their home in Northampton and to embark on a venture of such proportions have long been conjectured by their descendants, too. The early part of their story provides some understanding of the conditions that were common for many middle-class and lower-middle-class people living in Britain in the early 1860s, and why the prospect of immigrating to a new land became a compelling, if not the only, option. Now, I would like to also read this wonderful proposal penned by William Eady. It's written in beautiful, even script, proceeding first across the page horizontally and then vertically at right angles in a crisscross grid effect. The words penned by William Eady to Mary Louisa Roberts in 1850 were surely worthy of a suitor in a Jane Austen novel. I feel that I cannot delay any longer in expressing to you a subject which has for some time past engaged the principal of my thoughts. You have become the object of my special regard and the intended one of my choice. My affections are set supremely upon you. I now offer my hand and heart. Should you consider them worthy of your acceptance, and should my love be returned, I shall make it the principal study of my future life to promote the happiness of her whom I prefer to all others in the world. Not that I would desire your hand without your heart. Well, I think that is a most wonderful proposal. And today, Kay Eady has agreed to come and join us on the program. So I'm so glad you're here with us today to tell us more about the Lewis Eady family. And Kay, I'm just interested to know, how long did it take you to research and write up your book about the family? I mean, I know you have five children, so I don't know how you did it.
Well, Philippa, I didn't actually get fully started until some of my children had left home, which made it more possible to do extramural studies in particular. But I think to write the book has really taken about 15 years.
Really?
And largely because it required enormous amount of research, and I wanted it to have the integrity of having been a well-researched document.
Well, it certainly is a well-researched book. I learned facts that I never knew about my own grandfather. My mother never told me. But what inspired you to take on, I mean, such an onerous task?
Well, originally I had used some of the history for some of my assignments for my BA, and as a result of that, Massey University said, oh, you should see that those get published because it's an important part of New Zealand's musical history, the Lewis Eddy story. And then Auckland University also approached me to see if they could have a record of the history, because they were collecting for their new business school business histories, and in particular family business histories. And the Lewis Eddy, which is today 143 years old, was of course and had been in the family for four generations of family ownership, was the sort of story that they wanted to have, because it is in fact the oldest family music business in the Southern Hemisphere.
Really?
And it continues today, even though it's no longer in family ownership.
Right. Could you tell me a little about the background of William Eddy and Mary Louisa Roberts? How did they meet each other?
Well, it seems, and this was quite a difficult area of research. I used the British newspaper archives as sources and old census records.
Yes.
So it was a matter of putting things together like a jigsaw puzzle, really. But it's most likely that they met at the Congregational Church in Creton, where Mary Louisa was an organist. But she had also been trained as a teacher, so she was teaching in the area as well. So I assume that because that was the one thing I could find that they had in common.
All right. I did visit Creton when I was in the UK many years ago, and it was a really beautiful little village, from what I remember.
Yes, it is. The church is not the original church, because I think it was burnt down, so it's quite a modern little church now, because we visited it as well.
Mm. Oh, right. Well, what made them decide to settle in New Zealand? You know, go so far away from everything they'd known and their relatives?
I think the conditions in Britain at that time were really difficult for middle and lower middle class people. There was an enormous amount of poverty. As far as I can see, William had a butchery business, and I think that got into financial difficulties. He went off to London and worked for a while and came back. But New Zealand was also being promoted by the government at that time as an ideal place for people to emigrate to. Mm. So I think that was probably the main reason. He was the oldest son in his family, but he didn't appear to inherit the farm or anything that his father had. I suspect his father was a tenant farmer, in fact.
All right.
And so I think that they probably thought that was their best option.
Yes, and I think England had a burgeoning population at that time, but, you know.
It did.
So they were quite happy to send people off or see them off to the colonies.
The government saw that as a solution to what was looking to be quite a major problem for them.
Okay. Now, the Andrew Jackson. What would the conditions have been like for them on that?
Well, I think there were about 300 passengers on that clipper ship. She was a very a ship of great reputation. She was very fast, and she was considered to be, you know, a very worthwhile ship to be making the voyage on.
Yes.
And the Eddies came out as second class passengers, largely, I think, because William negotiated to become the ship's butcher.
Yes.
And of course, the livestock were taken live on board, so it was killed during the course of the voyage. And so that enabled him to pay for his family to be in second class, which was much better than being in steerage, where there was very little head height and it was very crowded and quite terrible.
It must have been terrible.
So that was, you know, one reason why he wanted them to be second class.
Yes.
But she, Mary Louisa Eady, kept a journal for the first 2 weeks. Mm. Apparently that was a common length of time for journals at the time. And that was interesting. I mean, they took quite a lot of their own furniture on board for their cabins.
Did they have to provide their own food?
Yes, they brought their own food. And interestingly, she said, she wished she had bought more pickles, but she had plenty of lemon cheese. I've always been intrigued with that because lemon cheese actually needs refrigeration.
Yes.
So, and they wouldn't have had it. But the meals were cooked upstairs, but the passengers had to prepare the food. So the meals were prepared in an enclosure on the deck. It was a bricked enclosure because the risk of fire was paramount on a wooden sailing vessel.
Yes.
And then they took the food down below to eat it. But I did research other archives to find out what happened on these sailing ships. And so I found out perhaps more from the archives than from Mary Louisa.
Oh, that's very interesting. Oh, my goodness. They were very brave, weren't they? I mean, you know.
Incredibly brave she was, but religion gave them a great sense of confidence that they would make the voyage all right.
Do you know much about the village where they originally came from?
Not a huge amount.
Was the village Cretan or was it Market Harbour? I can't remember.
No, they started their married life in a little village called Brixton.
Oh, right.
Brixworth.
Yeah.
But the house that we know that they lived in was in Northampton, and there is a photograph of it with Lewis Eady standing outside because he obviously visited on one of his early visits to Britain.
Yes.
And that was a house that looks quite reasonable, and they had a servant there.
Yes.
She probably had to sleep in the kitchen.
Yes.
So that's where they lived because that's it. Northampton was where William Eady had his butchery's meat store in the marketplace.
Yes, yes. Now, were most of the Eady family musically talented?
Well, Mary Louisa was undoubtedly talented because she had trained as an organist. And she and William, once they came to New Zealand, they did join the Auckland Choral Society, I think it was.
Yes.
And sang in the choirs. But their three sons all were talented in music.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that Mary Louisa perhaps taught them initially.
I know my grandfather could play the violin. I think Mum told me he used to play it when he was losing his eyesight.
Oh, is that your sight?
Which sounds quite sad. Yes. Now, we should really mention perhaps that the rivalry between the three siblings, William, Thomas, Arthur and Lewis, because this did lead to a court case because they all started up music shops. Is that right?
No, that's not quite right. William Thomas worked for the Harbour Board. He didn't. He was a pianist. And he often played with his two brothers in various groups.
Yes.
But the rivalry really started simply because Arthur got involved in the music scene in Auckland first.
Yes.
And then he involved Lewis, but Arthur sold musical instruments and Lewis sold pianos. And Arthur allegedly helped support Lewis in setting up his piano business.
Yes.
But the rivalry started when Lewis wanted to include the name Eadies, or he started to use Eadies, and Arthur objected to that because he considered he had the exclusive right to the use of that name. So that, in fact, led to three court cases disputing the use of the name.
Yes.
And it wasn't until the third court case that Lewis Eadies was legally able to use the name Eady, but not Eadies, because Arthur retained the right to use the name Eadies, which later became a problem, because when Arthur Eadies went into liquidation, it was purchased by Beggs, who then legally had the right to use the name Edie's because that was part of the purchase.
Oh, right.
And that became difficult. In the end, Lewis Edie's had to buy the name back.
Oh, my goodness.
Now they own the name Edie's.
Oh, right. Oh, that's all very interesting. I never knew a lot of that, but never mind. And now, Kay, where can people buy your book or read you, you know, if they're interested?
They can buy it from Lewis Edie's. It's at the university bookshop. It's in various bookshops around the country. I saw it just recently on display at Unity Books in Wellington. So I don't know if there's a Unity Books in Auckland, but it's in more specialised sorts of shops rather than Paper Plus. But Paper Plus will order it in if people want to purchase a copy.
Yes,
so I'm imagining Whitcalls would as well.
Yes. Well, I mean, it tells the story of the early businesses in Auckland, you know.
It does.
When it was growing, I suppose, as a city.
And it's set within the context of its time.
Yes.
It's very dense with facts and figures because I wanted that on record.
Yes.
And I also wanted it for the family because I think, you know, looking at my children, they had no idea how radio began and that type of thing. I mean, they'd never heard of a crystal set or valve radios.
Mm. It's amazing.
Our children have grown up in a different age.
Well, I didn't realise Lewis Edie's had a radio station. Did they?
They had one of the early private radio stations.
Extraordinary.
1ZR, and that later on the government took over the private radio stations and closed them down. They actually bought out Lewis Edie's station.
Yes.
But those stations were very popular with the public, the listening public, and they were able to... They had to have a religious content to their programs.
Oh, really?
But our station launched some famous people.
Aunt Daisy?
Aunt Daisy one, and Colin Scrimshaw for another, and he was considered a bit dangerous politically.
Yes.
And that's probably one reason why the government was keen to shut them down.
Oh, right. Gosh. I only recently discovered this about the radio station. Lewis Edie's,
Yes, well, there were quite a few in Auckland, but Lewis Edie's had a longer bandwidth than most of the others. So, it was a way of promoting your business. They weren't allowed to advertise, but they had to put their call sign out at the beginning of their sessions so everybody knew who they were anyway. So.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think those earlier Edie relatives were very enterprising, hard-working and ambitious. And I consider myself very lucky to have grown up in New Zealand as a result. I wish I could have known some of those relatives and to have heard their voices. But alas, they all passed long before.
Well,
it was before the wonderful technology that is available today. And I'll just have to content myself with their images and those sepia photographs that Mum gave me.
I do have an aluminium recording of Lewis Edie announcing the opening of the radio.
Oh, joy!
Station. And what he said is in the book because I transcribed it from the original recording.
Yes.
Because Lewis Edie's had their own disc cutting equipment for aluminium records. They made their own aluminium records.
Oh, that's absolutely amazing. Yeah. No. Is there anything else you would like to mention today about the Edie family?
Not really. Just the fact that it has been unique that there have been so many Edie music businesses in Auckland all competing with each other at one time. There were four.
Four?
In Queen Street, what's more.
Mm-hmm.
And it has always intrigued me as to how that affected them. But I suspect that the advertising and so forth that they ordered was actually a benefit. You see, the name Edie became a bit of a brand name, and for all of them it became a brand.
So they all benefited,
yes. I think, rather than, I don't think it really impacted on them adversely at all,
the fact
that they were all in competition.
No. Okay, I remember my mother telling me that she actually grew up in Domaine Drive in a big old house that's it's not there any longer. But that's it later became part of the Blind Institute, and it was moved somewhere out of Auckland. But that was the house with this wraparound veranda, lovely old colonial place, with a lovely garden, where she grew up. Do you know anything about that house?
No, only that that's where her father died, or he was found dead, yes.
Oh, really?
So, and he, there's a very interesting obituary for him.
Yes.
Which explains how much he had an amazing collection of Maori artefacts, which he's donated to the museum.
Yes.
And he was really, you know, quite a benefactor for Auckland.
Yes, yes. No, my mother adored her father. But I think little girls do. But no, it's really interesting to hear all this about the family, the Edie family.
Especially the fact that, you know, they've carried on with the music in many ways, because Lewis Edie's now has a foundation, for instance, a
yes.
charitable foundation.
Yes.
And that is helping support the young emerging musicians in New Zealand. It helps them with scholarships and the loan of musical instruments, especially, you know, the pianos, because some of the students don't have pianos in their own homes. So it's still supporting music in New Zealand.
Yes, well, that's great to know that it's carrying on. And, it, you know, the name is still out there. In Auckland.
It certainly is.
And they can't change the name, can they?
No, they can't. It's still called Lewis Edie Limited.
Yeah. Oh, well, Kay, it's been wonderful having you on the program today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Philippa, for talking to me.
Oh, no. And that book you wrote is absolutely amazing. And just the amount of research is mind-boggling. No wonder it took you 15 years?
Well, I think it was about
15 years.
Mm. Bit hard to remember, really.
Gosh. Mm. Well, I'm so glad that you did it. You know?
Well, it's there now as a legacy for the family and for anybody who's interested in music in New Zealand and how it began. It talks a lot about the music industry and the various performers that came from overseas and
yes.
the emergence of radio and TV and all of that sort of thing. It's all there mixed into one little book.
Yes. Mm. So thank you very much for coming along.
My pleasure.
Yes. Mm. Oh, well, thank you again, Kay. And listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our program today. And I've certainly learnt a lot through reading Kay Edie's book, Preludes and Feuds, The Lewis Edie Story.
community